Hey, this is James bringing you M1 of Dead Prez, who spoke at the Evergreen State College on February 19th at an event called Which Way Forward? On to the Next Offensive, a dress rehearsal for the revolution.
Thank y'all, thank y'all. That was a very informative video. I don't know if y'all got a chance to see that on YouTube, Evergreen Uprising, am I correct? Mr. Noah brought us that, and he brought it to the Congress and gave us a chance to watch it. Months before, we hadn't seen it, and it was something that I think everyone should check out on your own, go home and look at it again, and just take reference to that, and just put it in your minds and let that circulate a little bit. Thank you, Julie Z, for coming up and introducing everybody again. And we want to thank y'all for being respectful doing that. It could have been a lot louder, but thank you very much. Applause is greatly appreciated. I want to go ahead and keep the night moving, and we're going to bring up our featured guest today. He's a very good guy, very smart gentleman. He's been around in the hip-hop for a long time. He believes in it. That's one thing I can say when I look in his eyes. He's a great guy. And I would just like to bring up Mr. Mtulu Obala. Yeah?
Considered. more of a conversation than a speech. I'm not that great of a speech giver. I am a representative for my community, and this is the reason why I'm doing what I do. So with that being said, I want to start this dialogue and make this conversation clear, because I want to learn something too right here. So I don't think we can go any further than straight into this after this video to talk about, we have to begin with talking about the historical significance of what happened right here.
And
and how you do that is by framing what's going on in America today. I mean, here we're living in the biggest shift in wealth and out of the African and middle class communities that has ever happened under foreclosure crisis, recession at an all time high. In some places, half the people don't have a job.
Yeah.
This particular place that we're living in today, if we don't frame it this way, then we don't understand the results that we get when we talk about what happened here at Evergreen. Mm-hmm. What it is evidenced by a crisis in what's going on in the United States. Everybody can tell it. It's out in the open. It stinks of it. You read it in the news. People try to brush over it. Hey, this shit is in crisis. America is in crisis. And what we're even more able to tell is that America's looking for the great hero to rescue this crisis. We see it happening all the time. Every day we open the newspaper, and on our minds, I'm pretty sure, not just in the newspapers, in your mind, you're thinking, well, what is tomorrow going to be like? You're trying to figure out what tomorrow is going to be like based on what America's giving you today. So with that being said, we have to be clear. Once again, I'll reiterate, because this is the foundation, a part of where I come from. This system that we live in America is profoundly called capitalism. That's we know about it. I was able to be taught by people like O'Malley Teller that this particular system was created knowing that they had to do certain things to keep it in check, knowing that it fed off of a basic startup. You know, you can't even start a business unless you have some startup capital. So that's the startup capital for America was slavery. You know what I mean? It couldn't happen without any other way than slavery. Now, that's just a fact. It has nothing to do with any other kind of characteristic. But it has to be stated for us to understand how it got where it's going. Because they have to keep capitalism generated. They have to keep this thing making money. So, different kinds of capitalism, when it happens in that way, when it's really booming and America's doing great, they call that robust capitalism. Well, at this particular time, this is called moribund capitalism. I know I'm getting very technical with you, but I think y'all can handle this. You know what I'm saying? I think y'all can handle this. So, moribund capitalism, what you're able to see is that the capitalism can't work in the same old way that it used to. It's not producing enough around the world to feed itself from the parasitic tentacles that it has in every other place in the world. It can't do it in the same old way. So you find a system with creeks and crags in it, and we're able to see that by what's happening. And so a policy instituted in order to make sure that capitalism can keep going in the same old way. Because they say that America, they built, what they would say in the East is they have built an empire here in America upon which the sun would never set. These are the words of what would happen out of Europe in America, that an empire would be built upon which the sun would never set. So, but we're seeing the sun setting on this thing right now, in certain kind of ways. Now, this ain't a defeatist attitude. I want to be here tomorrow. However, for America to continue, it has instituted a policy of population control in order for that to happen. That's going to help keep everything in order. That's why when it's not enough bread on the shelves, you can't keep poor people from just walking in the grocery store and snatching the bread off the shelf. That's the difference between that is population control. I know I'm not saying anything new. This ain't a high theoretical concept. However, it boils down to some very pragmatic, practical things when it manifests itself in our lives and we start talking about population control, so I want to get to it. But even before I get to it, I want to talk about my history and my understanding of how this is. Once again, my name is Mutulu Olubau. I was pretty much got my political education in Florida, in Tallahassee, Florida. I came up in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's my brother in the back of the room. We grew up one block away from each other. Really. And so we did it all. We did it all. I can't even explain to you what we did. I'll probably get in trouble for telling you. But we did it all. I found myself in Tallahassee, Florida, going to a university trying to figure out how to change the world. I figured out that I couldn't get it on the campus. Or neither did I want to. And it was going to cost me a hell of a lot just to figure out that I couldn't find out. So I quickly made the decision to move away from campus. I couldn't get back to where I was from because I'm from a poor community. So I ended up hanging around the school where I met in the working class community a bunch of other Africans like myself who wanted to change the world, but who didn't see the same process, who weren't ready to assimilate, who weren't ready to try to get a degree out of it. They wanted to change the world right now and were basing their decisions upon people who had come along and made some really, really clear decisions to help us before. These were the real community organizers that gave us organizations like the Black Panther Party and everything that happened during the 60s. That's kind of where we picked up. We said, let's get straight to it. Let's get straight to the root of the problem. So with that being said, I ran into a community organization in Tallahassee called the Yuhuru Movement. And under the Yuhuru Movement, I was taught to be a community organizer. How to sum up what's happening today from the point of view of the people who have nothing, to be able to espouse that, make a leaf, put it in leaflet form, whatever form. I knock on your front door, let's talk about what we have in common about it and how we're going to change the world other than the solutions that they have offered. Because their solutions obviously are not working. So I'm going to knock on your door, figure out how we can, as a community, engage each other to find out what we're going to do to change this process. You know what I mean? So under that, I learned a lot about propagandizing. This is the basic work that went into making Dead Prez. Not only did I join this organization, but 20 more of my comrades in Tallahassee, including my partner Stickman, who we partnered up and became Dead Prez. So we all learned this stuff. We all got in and became community organizers and tried to really figure out how to make it work. And it wasn't no easy thing. It's not glamorous, you know what I'm saying? We, you know, was all eating the same out of the same pot of rice with nothing else. You know what I mean? And but it taught me a hell of a lot about what it's going to take. See, because I ran into, in confronting the system that way, I ran into injustice so much. In Tampa, Florida, there was a motorcyclist who was run over by the police and who got no justice. And the police got off. And it started rebellions inside the city of Tampa in Florida. And I happened to be near Tampa, and in the rebellion, 5 people were arrested. And that case became known as the Tampa 5. I worked on behalf of those 5 people to free them from injustice by the hands of the state, when really it was the killer cop who should have been in jail. And everybody knew it, and the whole city knew it, and that's why the city went up in flames in the first place. That was one of my first introductions to organizing. A few years later, in the center of the Uhuru Movement, which is based in St. Petersburg, Florida, there was, and also I gotta say that in the organization that I joined, there is an unbroken history of revolution since the 60s, which is hard to find because most of us grew up without no revolution in our lives. Most of us grew up with our parents not telling us any other solution except go to college, be good, follow the law. There's no really a history that we can call on that says this is a history of resistance in this country. You know, I didn't grow up with it. I didn't learn about who Malcolm X was until I was 16 years old. It was a damn shame. I was mad at my parents for not telling me what the fuck was going on. Really, it was serious. I thought I had been betrayed. Right. So this is in St. Pete. There is an unbroken history of this kind of resistance, year after year after year, building many organizations at that time that were progressive. Some come, some don't. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. There was a group around that time called JOMO. This is all during the 60s. Or the Junta of Militant Organizations. They didn't have the Black Panther Party because it had other formations in other places. But you had, even, you know, at that time, like, you know, NAACP was, like, progressive, you know what I'm saying? And they long outlived that right now, you know, but you understand what I'm saying. Even at that time, it was an institution that people were kind of going through. So with that history happening, I came into that place, and there was this unbroken confrontation with the authority there in St. Petersburg, Florida. So there was a crucial decision that came down when a brother named Tyron Lewis was murdered by 2 police sitting in his car with his car off. He was shot 16 times. His name is Tyron Lewis. I say these names so people will never forget them. Because after he was murdered brutally, you know what happened. The police were let off again. And in that city, that was the wrong thing to do. Because with that history of resistance in St. Petersburg, Florida, we were on the job, right on the spot. We were able to politicize and propaganda before they could call Tyron Lewis a drug dealer in the newspaper. We already had laid out his history. We knew his mom and daddy. We had told the whole community who it was. The news knew before it was able to happen. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it was that ability to organize that helped people to get on board before and to be able to make a decision about what really happened before the media got to the thing. They came down on our Uhuru house, our place where we organized heavily. When I say they, I mean the police in a really heavy way. Because the community was already a community center. So people would come to the center, and especially when Tyron was murdered right down the street, they came to the center looking for, okay, what we're going to do? And the police surrounded the thing. They surrounded and they told everybody in this place, the center, just like where we are right now, they said, you got to get out of here. They started yelling in their megaphones, you got to get out of here because you are having an unlawful gathering. This is a place where we meet all the damn time, you understand? But today we're having an unlawful gathering because they murdered the boy down the street, so now we're having an unlawful gathering. Meanwhile, we know our rights, but we know it's going to get crazy. So what ends up happening is the police attacked us. We get everybody inside our particular place, and the police attack us in the Uhuru house. And when I say attack us, I mean from every kind of way. They used every canister of tear gas that they had in that county and the surrounding county in that building on women and children. And we were the soldiers there to defend that. And there were people who knew that we were in the building who put masks around their face and who would go and snuff out different fires that they had started on the yard because they didn't want to be seen by the cameras. I mean, they call themselves the ghost. In the next day in the newspaper, they call them the ghost faces because they had these white masks around their face. But ultimately, what would happen is even helicopters flying over, doing all kinds of things. I mean, you can read about it. We call it the Battle of St. Pete in St. Petersburg. We call it the Battle of St. Pete. All around the murder, injustice of Tyron Lewis. I don't want to belabor this at all. I just want to let you know my history of organizing inside this country. And last but not least, we began Dead Prez, this is some years later, and decided that we're going to move to New York City because we wanted our music to be able to compete on the same shelf. Because in Tallahassee, Florida, you know what I'm saying, it was just like a three-stoplight town, you know what I'm saying? It ain't no industry music powerhouse, you understand? So we were really trying to figure out, you know, how to make our music able to be heard by the mass of people. So I said, you know, I know New York City very well. Let's go to New York. I told my partner, we loaded up the truck and we was out. And so upon getting to New York City and doing Dead Prez, I began to organize the same organization. I built a chapter of that same organization called the Uhuru Movement. It grew tremendously, especially with our ability to spread the message inside the music that Dead Prez had, which was growing in popularity. This is 1995, maybe 1996. But just to get to the point, I am living in Brooklyn, and the brutal NYPD, y'all know the notorious, I don't gotta say the name, Admiral Lumumba. I don't have to say Amadou Diallo or Sean Bell. I don't have to say all these names to you because you know how brutal the New York City Police Department can be. Well, the same New York City Police Department who did that to them, they ride around in this unit called the Street Crimes Unit, and they have on NYPD baseball caps in the back and plain clothes. And so what they would do is they would jump out on you and do all kind of demeaning things to you, all kind of demeaning stuff. It's snow, it's cold on the ground, and they're doing all kind of stuff that we weren't with. But on top of that, I'm just coming out of my partner Stick's crib. And my house, pardon me, to everybody who knows me. So pardon me, because I'm getting into it. I'm feeling like it's a conversation, y'all, so pardon me. I feel like it's a conversation, I'm going to get to it. So I'm coming out, and we are immediately confronted by the same Gestapo-style police who tell us to do all kind of demeaning stuff. And at that point, we know our rights, and we're not with it. So there's five of us. And we end up being accosted by the police. I mean, we fought. But, you know, at the end, they had 27 police on the block at the end of the day. And so we ended up going down, and it became a big thing in New York City where we fought this particular case. We called it the New York Yahoo 5. And I was involved in it. I still have bruises to this day behind that particular case. And it goes, I just want to say the list goes on and on. This is in my ability to confront, to resolve these issues, to talk about how we politicized it. I mean, it wasn't just the point of confrontation that happened. It was the campaigns that followed. It was the meetings in the churches. It was the community, the real propaganda that went down to tell people what really went down and how to really know your rights. The campaigns that happened after that that were the real effective part about what happened at that time. You know what I mean? So that being said, when you talk about when the President Obama says that he is a community organizer, I don't think he's talking about the same kind of community organizer I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? And the reason why I say that, because you have to be clear when you say that, because you know he would say that's his first job, you know. But you have to be clear on what interests you're organizing in. It's not just about community organizing. What community you're organizing for. You understand what I'm saying? These are important things to consider, and not just that he was, I won't even belabor it because it's not about him, but I want to say the difference in it. I come from the point of view of African people in chains, the point of view of the slave who would want to be free, at that community. And it is out of that community that we're going to get justice. You know, other than that, we're just going to get some reform, just like what you see now happening. You know, the stimulus bill that they plan to pass won't even touch the working class community at all. You know what I mean? It plans to benefit only the middle class and upper class community, as we've seen, as they made off. You know what I mean? They continue. So, you know, it's that community we're talking about organizing in which I come from. So, so all that to be said, where then is the cultural significance of hip hop? And all this hodgepodge of who I am and what is going on today. And it certainly ain't in a hip-hop presidency. I really want to rebuke the fact that this man can even be associated with hip-hop in the first place. The point is, the place where you can see it happening and where I saw it was right here on this campus the night that we came to be involved in a concert with you. I saw the cultural significance of what hip-hop means to America right here in action. And, you know, really, seriously. Because they would have you believe that hip-hop is a code word for criminal. You know, they would have you believe that. And when you go to other countries, I'm just back in from Norway and Sweden 3 days ago, and everywhere else, these streets are paved with gold. Everywhere else, there ain't nothing going on wrong. They pretty much are absorbing American culture a la hip hop. It's happening. And that's how the big trick is being pulled over on the rest of the world, through the medium of hip hop music. So I have to be clear when I'm talking to the rest of the world that I ain't that. I'm not that. If you consider me that, then X me out of hip hop. Let's make a new category. You know what I mean? Right. You know, right. Because I'm not in that category. You know. So, for me, like we came here to have a fantastic, like I said, I had been here before to speak to you in this kind of way, to talk about the relevance of hip-hop and the prison industrial complex and political organizing. I had come here to talk to you. Some of you may have seen me do that before, but then we were able to organize through one of the people who booked their press to do shows, to come here. I told Skip, we gotta go here. There's some riders out here. It's gonna be great. The Hip Hop Congress is gonna make it really good. And you guys showed up, red, charged up. You know what I mean? We came in, met with our usual homies, my homie Moya, at the same time, and we got in gear. We were ready, me and Stick. We knew what we were about to pull. We had a couple of new joints to play for the people, and we had a glorious concert. I mean, you guys were unbelievable. And it ended on a really high note. I mean, I remember being literally high off the people walking off the stage. And it was at one point during the show that I do remember that small inflagration that happened that they documented here on the screen. You know, it was pretty small. It was pretty minimal. You know what I mean? In comparison to what I've seen, you know what I'm saying, in the world, I've seen it where it shuts the whole thing down. We went on and had a great show and finished it off and everything. You know what I mean? And the people, I think we left there leaving with some fantastic images and motivation and inspiration and messages in our heads. I know that's what I was about. That's what I was trying to deliver. And that's what we left on that positive note. As a matter of fact, I remember sitting in the back of the thing, of the venue, doing interviews for about an hour, or talking to local zoo people, artists, I mean, kicking it. And really, lo and behold, you know, somebody just tapped me on the shoulder and said, man, you should look out the front door. And when I did, I mean, it was amazing. I just couldn't believe what I saw with my eyes. It took me right back to St. Petersburg, Florida, where I've been before with this. And there's a couple of things that ran through my brain. So immediately, I run to Stick. I say, Stick, it's going down outside. And we should, you know, you should come look at it so we can assess what it is, you know, how do we move around this. So then Stick went back, and meanwhile, DJ Obi, he's still doing an interview. So we just got two-thirds of the team away at this particular time. And we probably went even deeper than that. So then when we found out, we looked at it for a minute, and what we saw was amazing. I mean, I saw some courageous people, you know, who had, who I was convinced at that time saw injustice, and who I saw it grow to a point that we couldn't handle it. That obviously something had gone wrong, and the people needed to resolve it right now. I know how that goes. I'll be in that situation too. Well, you have to resolve it right now. And it looked like that was going on. I see people with masks. I saw mace being sprayed openly in the air, like, you know, it was piling. And I couldn't believe that it was happening. It was almost surreal in front of my eyes. So I went back and gathered the team, and then we had to figure out, what do we do? And, you know, my partner Stick's first instinct was, yo, let's go. Let's go out there. And I said, whoa, hold up. You know, Dad, I got to tell you, that's the first thing that I said, whoa. Now, what is it going to do? What good is it going to do? Because when I go out there, I'm going to be one of the people with the masks on, you know, turn it over to police car. Hold on. So I say, hold on. Let's think about it, because if that happens, and when that happens, we're going to jail. Stick man in M1. You know, we are going to jail. As I saw a lot of people, I had not known about the history of this area. It was all new. This was scorched earth, new territory. I'm able to see new budding, new revolutionaries, new faces, new courageous faces. So we sat and watched it. We watched how far it would go. How far it would go until it came to a point that we said, well, we're not going to go and get in there. We're not going to go and get in there. But what we ought to do is we're going to sit around. We're going to watch it from the outside. We're going to keep it. And keep it at a phone call distance away from everybody we know that needs to know about this right here. And so we watched it for about an hour, probably two. I mean, until probably when it was about over. So when you're talking about when the National Guard came in, I think maybe we had probably just pulled off before they were coming in, because we wanted to make sure how the thing was going down. But as I got back to my hotel room with Stick and Umi, and we were able to summarize the situation, our summation came like this. One, did we get justice? We got it, because that's what I said on the stage. And don't even go around, this is not about bravado, this ain't romanticism. I'm not Che Guevara. I'm not, these ain't the same conditions. The objective is to win. The objective is victory. So if we ain't victorious, then what are we? And because I've been in that particular situation before, I said, well, what's the difference between what happened here and an organized rebellion? What's the difference between an uprising and a rebellion? And it's clear. there's clear differences. I had to say that night in the room. And the uprising happens spontaneously. An uprising happens from a reactionary understanding. A rebellion is planned. A rebellion has specific goals and objectives. A rebellion is strategic. You got to know that. I'm a rider for real. I'm down to like 4 flat tires and to the rest. You feel me? But I know about what it means to be romantic. I done sat many days in a jail for reasons that I shouldn't have to do that. I don't think anybody here needs to waste your energy to do that. Nobody here needs to do that. So let's save it. Let's know when the real battle is. When we gonna fight our real war? What's the real war? So I'm not saying I'm not making any judgment about what happened that night. I'm just saying that's the mind frame that I'm looking at any particular situation that we're getting into. So as I got back and we summing it up and we thinking about how that's gonna fare, we're getting news and how it's all because of their prayers. You know, because of what we said. Y'all did that. You know, everybody, what's gonna happen. At first, I started to be able to say, let me call, should I call a lawyer? You know, is this going to get like that? But I really began to fear for your ability to, at the bottom line, at the end of the day, I felt really awful about your ability to use hip-hop to organize again another day on this campus. Because now, they'll say these kind of events can never happen. Now, when we're talking about getting some real political power happening on the campus, they only associate it with, a disorganized, flame up on the campus. That does our organization, that does our movement no good. It's no good. It paralyzes our ability on this campus. You know what I mean? So let's not, once again, no judgment. But I do know that the problem that night was that there was a young man who was arrested unjustly. That the problem wasn't the people, the problem was the police. That's what became clear to me. Now, how do we resolve that is a whole other issue. We weren't wrong. The police were wrong all the while. But how do we deal with the state when their policy is, going back to the beginning, when their policy is population control? When that's the policy they know going in to keep this new world order up is population control and they practicing it on your ass, how do you act? How do you act? You got to know how you move. How you moving in that particular situation. So, I can also say the evidence, other evidences of rebellion, an uprising versus rebellion are the Rodney King verdict as well. And you can go back and study history. You should study. You should study how the police moved when that happened. So next time that happens, we can be more calculated social scientists. We need to be calculated. This whole thing is an art and science in which to be perfected. Revolution is an art and science in which we have to perfect. And so if you're not being a political animal, a social scientist, in this particular, if you're thinking with emotion, with anything, if you think with emotion at all, get away from me and my army. Because we ready to put this thing in a calculated, rational point of view and move it. I like to say this, but I'm ready to get to the conversation part. I don't want to speak out loud. The time is limited as well. I want to say this. The history of resistance in this area is phenomenal. I know the organizations. I recognize the symbols. I see the look in your eyes. I know what your intentions are. Let's look it up, y'all. Let's look it up. There's no reason why this thing should not be hooked up nationally. We have to be able to hook up the intentions of what you're doing on this campus with what's happening in West Oakland, California.
Yes, sir.
If you're not hooking it up, you gotta hook up. So I'm seeing it. I know I've organized around this movement a lot, not just in the African community. I've organized amongst the white left progressive people. I've organized amongst white left opportunism. The ugly part. I've organized around You know what I'm saying? I went to the meeting, so don't tell me. I've been there. So when you talk about the south side of Chicago, Illinois, which is where I cut my teeth, under the leadership of Fred Hampton, Fred Hampton's widow, Akua and Jerry, and how this thing comes into play, I'm ready to engage it all. I think we all have a place on this field. We all have a role to play. We just have to get in line and play. I've seen it historically here with the rebellions that we saw, even afterwards on the port here with the conferences like the GA conference. But the objective has to be to raise the working class interests, raise the working class agenda. Use what you have to raise the working class agenda, and we will save this land. We will save ourselves. Yeah, it's true. Because everybody else is trying to save their ass, but at the end of the day, we are the workers. We will build this whole thing. Now, even if you come from a rich family, even if you have all the money and everything you need, a recession is no matter to you, that there is the only way we're going to solve America's problems is from the same way that there's only one way in and one way out. And this whole thing rests on the edifice of brigandage, bondage, slavery, the worst kind of trickery that you can name, bamboozlement. You know that, you know how it goes. In order for it to happen, we have to stand upright. Let America fend for itself. And that's going to be the working class that has to do that. We can't, you know, all this bailout shit is not, that ain't have nothing to do with the conversation that really we need, really, that we really need to have inside our community. Everybody who voted for Obama, I feel you. I didn't, but I feel you, right? So let's, if you want to change something, if you're ready to change, my challenge is to change the agenda that America has for the working class. Yes. If you want to keep out some change, let's talk about that. It will, you know, why not?
Yes.
Why not? So, that's the reason why, even more recently, and we're going to get the official announcement. But that's the reason why, again, I'm here today, because I want to be able to talk back and forth with you about what we're going to do from here forward, what my plans are specifically. And it's also why about a week or so, or maybe a more ago, I became accepted being the national spokesperson for the Hip Hop Congress.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it because of the many chapters that we have, the many agendas that are everywhere. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We have to support our local voices. That's how we do it. We organize to support the local voices. We're giving ourselves our voice back.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They're speaking for us everywhere, y'all. Believe me, I'm telling you. I just came from Scandinavia. They're speaking for you, and they're not saying your story. You know what I mean? They're not. They're giving you a neo-colonialist story. They're giving you the Barack Obama on America, ahead on the same America face story. I'm not with that. I know what neo-colonialism is. If you don't know, look it up. Study France Fanon. Know what it is. Know about that indigenous head on that same power system. I'm not falling for that trick. We're not falling. We know what time it is. And you do too.
Yeah.
Nobody is fooled. Ain't nobody fooled by it. I don't even have to belabor that conversation. Y'all have it enough. I know it's plenty of time to have that discussion here, and I hope you're coming to the right conclusions. We have to lead ourselves, free ourselves. Do it now. Don't waste a moment. So that's why I became the national spokesperson for this organization, because I want to get in. I want to be able to help build a networking social structure, a social tool that we can use as a weapon to defend our people's rights.
Very good.
I got to do it. Now's the time to do it. Are y'all with me? I came from Seattle, because I came in Seattle, and we met at the Umoja Peace Center has been organized by my brother Joaquin, who has defended the Central District forever. There was actually a murder there that just happened just recently. the brother T-Love, who I want to, at this time, just remember, because that's what it's about. He was a mover and a shaker, a local promoter, I guess, in the area, but very well loved, and I know we took a terrible loss there this morning, so I was able to go around in that particular place and see the new green space that we're building, the garden that we're building, the community space there. And from here, I'm here at this particular moment to build with you all, which I'm so happy to be doing. And from here, I think we're going to move out to Portland a little later. And all this is happening, you know, in, I guess, a piece that's being made called A Day in the Life of the West Coast Hip Hop Congress. So I just want to let you know that you're all a part of it right now. So, yeah. So, there's many more things I want to mention. I guess I'll do that. I don't have to do it at this particular moment, but maybe I can, if it's okay with you, I'm going to end my little talk right here and we can begin our conversation. Is that cool?
Give one more hand for Mr. M1 for coming out, y'all. Walk up to you, hand you the mic so we can cut some of the time out, keep it going, and keep it moving, that'll work. Yeah, we just pass it down the aisle to the person who got their hand up. Is that good? All right. So he's going to take a break, and the rules are we're trying to make this where, you know, you listen to the question. If it's the question that you were going to ask, let it go. You know what I'm saying? Just hope for the right answer. We got one question per person. We can't come back with the follow-up because the time is limited. We got about 45 minutes. Okay. And we do appreciate every question that comes out. Let's just try to respect the house, each other, and the speakers, okay? Is that fair? Yeah. Evergreen style? All right, let's do that. First up, Jenna, yes?
Do you believe in nonviolent revolution?
Well, I think there's a possibility. And that possibility can only happen if our oppressor, the people who have locked us up, who have us in chains, want to peacefully resolve this conflict. I can put it to you like this. There's a kind of a two-pronged theory about how to change this particular system that we live in. And it is one that there's a bunch of people that go to Congress and always talking to the local mayor and about, you know, it is like a plea to the system to change. It is a plea to the system to change itself. Hey, please, you know, Mr. Oppressor, don't be so bad and hard on me. But then there are those of us who believe the only way that we're going to see our way out of this is to concentrate power. It's to amass power among the masses. That's the only way we'll do it, is amass power and bargaining, to be able to bargain with this thing. That's how everybody else does it. And in reality, that's how we're going to have to do it amongst the people who feel like we need some real justice. All of us, black, white, brown, yellow, red. The only way we're going to do it is say, all right, now I got some of this, and the only way you're going to have to play, because now I can do something to you. And so it doesn't have to be valuable. Then we can sit down at the table. And most of the time, that's what happens. It happens peacefully. Even in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, we say, free Mumia or else. I say it. I don't know who else says it. But I say, or else. You know, the sky's the limit. Whatever you want to do, I'm ready to do. Because the system will do anything. They'll wiretap you, bomb your thing. They don't care what they'll do, right? You know, the system will. They'll be violent with you all day. Everything, even the propaganda on the media is violent. That's terrorism. So here, and so my thing is this, with Mumia, we say, right, free Mumia or else. But in the meantime, I'm going to send this lawyer in here. I'm going to set it up. I'm going to tell you he didn't do it. I'm going to show you he didn't do it in all these different ways. and allow you legally the ability to bow out. Let them out, and hey, we'll be cool. But if you don't, we'll tear this thing up, and we wouldn't even care. We're going to burn it all the way down. You feel me? So at the end of the day, it's their decision. It's the oppressor's decision on whether this thing is violent or nonviolent.
Personally, from my perspective, what happened last year was not necessarily, it may have been an uprising, but it was a reactionary one at best,
yes.
And not very indicative of any sort of movement that was happening. My question to you as a social organizer, how do you recommend to us, as a transient college evergreen student body, how do we organize and, more importantly, sustain the movement?
Yeah. Well, there is a way to do it on this campus. I think you have to create an organization that is autonomous to whether this campus operates or not. And it doesn't have to depend on this particular campus's funds that has its own political objectives. And there's many organizations that you can adopt on this campus that will do exactly, I'm pretty sure there are already. And so it's going to happen that way. That way, you can move inside in the ranks, rank and file through the organization. As you old and you matriculate out of this place, you get your degree and find your place. But it has to be the training mechanism to raise the agenda of the working class. I'm saying it, African working class, again and again and again. Because if you come here, fly away, little birdie, you did nothing for me. Bye. I see you on the other side of the fence. But it has to be a training mechanism to create revolutionaries everywhere we are in every aspect of it. I don't care if you're a teacher, a janitor, a pilot, whatever you can do, you can be abused by this group. You can be utilized. I'm not trying to put any kind of stipulations upon what it is. But that has to be the mechanism that you use to make that happen and stay on this campus. Because to say this is not your community. This some of you may have grown up here, but most of you didn't. So you're gonna go somewhere else, maybe back where you came from. But your purpose has to be the same. And that's it.
Next.
Thanks for speaking. I said one question. Well, I guess I can only have one question, but I, in my own personal experience, have seen like a lot of amazing things happen in terms of like small groups working together, whether with other small groups or just alone. And I really want to know like how you feel about the role of crews or affinity groups, the small groups of people that trust each other, and like in a revolutionary sense, like how this, like what roles these like small groups of people play that are really inevitable and like important for, you know, like when it comes down to it, like the people next to you who are gonna, you know, back you up for whatever you're doing.
I think it's great. I think that's great for morale. I came up in a crew like that. I still work with my same crew. What I found though is that the people are our greatest resource, no matter where we are. The people are our greatest resource. So, if we don't rely on that resource, then sooner or later, you're going to run out of ability to move. Let me give you a prime example. Move. Philadelphia. The particular organization was progressive. It was defending the rights of every living creature before it was even cool, before Peter was around, you feel what I'm saying? And so, but it was not a community, it was not a mass community organization. You pretty much had to know about it to join it. It wasn't like it had an agenda where it would go and engage the community. As a matter of fact, in the surrounding community inside in Philadelphia where it was, they didn't know what MOVE was about. They just knew them as a bunch of people who had a bunch of hair, which was dreads, and they wore denim all the time, and they definitely didn't do what we do. You know what I mean? Didn't know their political stance, weren't able to attach on to their goals and objectives, ideas and ambitions. Nonetheless, a crew, a righteous crew, but not connected to the community, our greatest resource, the people. So when the police came to drop a bomb on their house, nobody didn't do anything. They, as a matter of fact, they were. It was easy to convince people that they were a threat to your community. Move out of the way. We're going to bomb this house, burn down your whole block, including your house, too, because you need these people who were just raising children off the block. So, mind you, I don't hope I'm answering your question. The crew is very important. It's right. It's our morale. It builds our confidence. It lets us test our theory amongst one another. But our greatest resource is the people. So we got to connect. Even if it's your crew inside an organization, associated with, in solidarity with, connected to, got to be somehow associated with the people. The people. It's the people. It's the people.
Several protests in Olympia, and a lot of them start off with a good objective and nonviolent, doing really well, and then inevitably somebody will like toss a brick through BIA's window and just bring down the fury of the Olympia PD. And I was just wondering what, in that situation, you do with that person who threw the brick, or do you separate yourself from that completely, or how do you keep the objective of the movement separate from that kind of stuff?
Yes, great. Ultimately, there's a movement in the interest of our movement when that happens. It's just got to be said. As rebellious as it is, as unbridled, as whatever it may seem, it doesn't work in the interest of our movement when that stuff happens. We have to calculate everything and make it move according to that design. And when it moves outside of that, it has to have nothing to do with us. So when that brick gets thrown through the window, we have that person. We have to identify he or she as a provocateur.
Yes.
And that's what it is. Because when you move that way, you move as an agent of the state. That is what, even if it wasn't your intention, you may just be dumb. But, come on. That is what the state does inside our organization. The state comes and creates that kind of thing that we don't need. The state does that. We don't need that person. So we identify he or she and we say, you got to rectify this inside with the people. I mean, we ain't the police. You ain't going to jail or nothing. But hey, you ain't going to be around us and do that. Now unless you show us through 6 weeks of political education. Somebody who is just wants to judge somebody or come down from the outside. I have done this. I have been in my own, as a young wannabe revolutionary, wanted to create. I was impatient about creating this romantic revolution. I wanted it then at 19 years of age. I'm 36 today. At 19 years of age, I was like, yo, I want this revolution today. I can't wait till tomorrow. So we did something stupid. We went and had a community event, and we called the police on our own event. It sounds stupid to you, but at that time, I was convinced that it was going to cause the kind of confrontation that would make everybody see the revolution is on. Let's do it now. It was dumb. It was dumb. You know what I'm saying? And I'll be the first one to admit to it, to tell you, like the one we want in the organization, that person got to mature. That person we got to leave definitely to the side for a little while, you know. So, you know, definitely.
Cool.
So much of organizing happens really reactively. Like someone gets arrested or, you know, worse, you know, something bad happens that gets everyone fired up and organizing around. Do you think that's a productive way of organizing, or is there a more proactive approach that we should be taking into consideration?
You are, obviously, I can tell that you thought of, you are a thinker. And you know that we can't be reactionary. You know, I think I could hear that coming out your question. No, we can't be reactionary. We can't sit on our heels. We can't ambulance chase, meaning organize from event to event. We can't do that. Why would we organize that way? That's only going to leave us on our heels at every time. We have to be progressive. We have to think about what's going to move us in the future, the real issues. Really, I mean, it's hard to do when they give us nothing but a 6-inch square dollar bill. They say, look, man, this is all you have. Think inside the box.
Yeah.
You have to be able to say, no, okay, what do I want my future to be, and organize toward it right now. Get it today. And that, then you're going to confront the state in a whole other way. Then you're going to be trying to change a particular kind of policy that governs how you live. And it's not going to be about whether somebody gets beat down by the police or not. And we have to think progressively. We have to think reactionary is never the way. So I hope that kind of answers your question. There's too many issues that we can put on the forefront. I'm pretty sure you have a plethora of them waiting for you right now, that if you got together and said, let's not be reactionary, here's what we can organize for, in our wildest dreams, this is what we want to be, and make it happen. And that's when you create your future. That's making free.
So is passing the mic working out? She was not up for the last 30 minutes, so it's passing the mic well. I got three in order right now. Is that okay with everybody? That's what I'm doing. I'm going right now. Y'all good? Okay, let's do it.
You talked a lot about connecting. What does connecting look like in your experience on a local level with our community? Because I think that that's something that, in my experience, we struggle with, is connecting with the community and being able to have a dialogue with them. So connecting with people here, with people all around the country.
Well, great question. I think connecting has to be done, I think, in a real, genuine way. It's not easy because we are taught to separate, to divide our everything. You know what I mean? Be secretive. Don't let anybody steal your idea. Especially when it comes down to the local artist community. I just found a new home in Houston, Texas. Not for long, but I live there. I live in Houston. And man, I found a bunch of crab in the barrel kind of artists that I've ever seen in my life. I mean, nobody wants to see anybody get, you know, move forward. When in reality, you know, and the reason why is because, you know, I guess the mainstream music scene has deemed Houston a hot spot to make music now. So if you're a Houston artist, you know, everybody wants to be the next dude. And so what I saw, though, you know, from the outside, I didn't know, I was convinced that all these guys get together and they hang out and they, you know, it's obvious because they all look alike and they make the songs about the same stuff. They got to be doing it the same way. Well, how naive was I? Because when I got there, I was able to see, like, people don't want people to get together for no reason at all. So, and genuinely, I guess the way that I started to try to connect inside Houston, Texas was to go to some of those particular places where people are at and bring those forces who I already. I became a connector in that way. When meeting with Mutulu Shakur, who is my mentor, who's Tupac's stepfather, who's imprisoned in Atlanta Federal Pen, I actually found that was a purpose even higher than my calling, because Mutulu Shakur, his name actually, Mutulu, means to do that. It means to show people the path, and mine too has a namesake of his. But he would, in the 1960s, connect organizations like the Peace and Freedom Party, the Freedom and Peace Party, with organizations like the Black Panther Party, and cultural organizations as well, and it would be that kind of whole hodgepodge that would make the whole movement happen. And I think that's what needs to happen inside music as well. So I take it. I think the true connection to me is one-on-one. It happens like in, without the media. You know, it happens in private settings where we are able to really dialogue with one another about what's really going on and what our grievances are. And there's plenty of ways to set that up. There's all kinds of ways to set up that particular thing to happen. You know what I mean? You call it a party. You call it a disco. In the South Side of Chicago, that's what they call it. You can call it a potluck, depending on where you are. You know what I mean? But it goes down, and I think that's the genuine connection. That's what I do wherever I'm at, and I'm bringing us across the same path. And next thing you know, we all doing it the same way. I hope that answered your question.
I'm from Houston, too. Thanks for going down there. There seems to be some protests that have been taking place, and I guess my question is, how do you bring people who basically have the same idea? They're not for police murdering people, but the objective on how people or individuals go about getting it, like certain groups really wanting it now and using violence to achieve that, using like strategic violence, mm-hmm. But people who are not for violence, we want the same thing. We don't want people to be murdered. We don't want people to be oppressed. But it seems like those views peace, violence, separate people? How do you bring that together and ignite that?
Wow. Yeah, man, I mean, that's the tough one. You know, because it is perspective on violence. Because the U.S. government supporting Israel would draw a siege down on Gaza and call that justice.
Yes.
But when Palestine would even protest, even a protest peacefully, that's terrorism. They call that terrorism. You know what I mean? Not even if they shoot a missile, a bomb, or a gun. Well, then that's definitely terrorism. When the same tactic enacted upon the rest of us is just called war. You know what I mean? So it is a matter of perspective, and it's a delicate one at that, because all of us want peace. The idea is that we want peace, but what are we willing to do to get peace? What are we willing to do to get it? You know what I mean? What does peace actually mean at the end of the day? You know what I mean? Because a lot of times it means, well, we both share the same power, so I ain't fucking with you, but you ain't fucking with me. But until we have equal rights and justice, then it's all violent. Like I said, television is violent. Television is terrorism against us right now. Right now, we can't even avoid it. You know what I mean? And that ain't peaceful. That's not peaceful in all kind of way. You know what I'm saying? You might suffer peacefully, but you're suffering. You know, so it's a hell of a perspective. You know, to me, it's about the end is justifying the means. And I can't say that I have all the answers. I don't even know. I can say that I can contribute what I do know. And if I'm wrong, then y'all tell me how to do this thing more peacefully. And I'm down. I'm down to do it until I see that it has no, until it's bankrupt, until it doesn't work for me anymore. And then I'm down for how it go. I just know that this thing ain't peaceful with us.
Excuse me, sir. We got about 20 minutes to do it, so we're going to see if Mr. M1 will answer his questions a little shorter. Okay. And I think we should just go ahead and do that line and let everybody get in line and just run it out and do it for the last 20 minutes. Because passing around the mic is going to take a little bit. Y'all want to do that? Y'all want to line up real quick?
I'll keep it like that.
Start right here. Let's just come up front.
I'll keep it short. My bad, y'all.
I think this gentleman right here in the yellow was first, though. Sorry about that, y'all. Gotta respect the bill.
I want to thank every one of y'all too for coming through and participating in this discussion. I think it's been great. I want to continue it. I hope that you all are signing lists, sign up sheets. I know Hip Hop Congress has one. I think that we should all be having these kind of meetings more and more. I think I said that last time I was here. If you're not, you know, if you just come in here to entertain yourself, then cool. But there's a lot of people who want to come here to you know, get involved. So move out the way and let those people come to the front so we can start getting with the people who really mean business. You know what I mean? So thank you again for this meeting. I see in your eyes that y'all are serious about what it's going to take. And me too. So let's get it on. What do you want to do?
Something you said that really made my ears ring was when you were talking about the difference between white liberal progressives and white liberal opportunism. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know if you have any advice on how you deal with that in other people, mm-hmm. how you deal with it within yourself,
yeah.
how you take what might be well-meaning and dumb
right.
and try to get something constructive out of it.
I think you have to, not you in particular, but thank you for that question. Why? Because in this particular place, and I try to keep this short. That ain't no question that's short. We might need to talk after this. but I'll try to keep it relatively succinct. The liberalism in America comes as a result of a limited progressive approach to freedom, to liberation. Our whole goal and objective has to be to undermine capitalism from its root. If we're not doing that, then you'll have what happens when we talk about Mumia Abu-Jamal, when I will accept nothing less than freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal, but there are some people who are cool with just abolishing the death penalty, which is nothing to do with justice. Fumi Abu-Jamal. There's people who want to create a career around political prisoners, who want to just have a job, who want to say, I'm doing something righteous and I'm able to go to this office every day and do it. We'll have no intention at all in freeing him. As a matter of fact, benefit from him staying in prison every year. And it gives them a cause to be a part of. So it is that I think is the difference. It is the objective at the end that matters the most. We have to say, am I about undermining white nationalism, undermining white power, returning power to the African working class community? If I'm about returning power to the African working class community, it will allow white people who are progressive about, when we say liberal, but I don't even mean liberal, I want to be revolutionary about what they're doing,
yes,
to say, I'm going to check myself. I'm going to check my white nationalism in myself. There's white nationalism in all kind of black people. I see it all, in Africans, you know what I mean? There's all kind of white nationalism in, but these are ideas espoused by capitalism. We've been born and bred. This is 500 years of this kind of slipshod education I've been getting that helps me do the same thing. That helps me oppress my brother. In hip-hop music, that gives me the same oppressive contract that gave me the kind of contract I got. So I'm going to go and do the same thing to this man who's in hip-hop, who's trying to come up, just because that's what I've learned. That's white nationalism manifesting itself in the form of a rap contract. It just is, you know what I mean? And we have to be able to check it ourselves, but the way we can check it is by saying, what's the goal? What's the goal? Am I about changing this system which feeds off the death and poverty and misery of the people into something that feeds, that can contribute to a forward step in humanity? And that's how I got to end it. And I'm going to get with you after this. You know what I mean? Yeah,
thank you. You mentioned earlier, you talked about the NAACP as an organization that in the past was very radical and very effective and now not so much. And I think in some ways unions were that way too in our history. Very radical, not so much now. A lot less people involved in them. But they're here. Mm-hmm. They're an organization that's been around a long time, even here on this campus. You know, right. After we leave here today, it's going to be unionized people that are cleaning up after us.
Right.
Even the officer that was on that videotape that made that erroneous, you know, wrong arrest joke, she's in the same union as the people cleaning up, you know, people doing what I'm doing too. And so how do you see unions, unionized workers, I mean, because we're all working people, mm-hmm, you know, and we're organized, mm-hmm, and it's there. How do you see that involved in the revolution that you're talking about? Because, when a lot of these unions, when they first came around, they were about revolutionizing the way working people were involved in their own work.
Yeah.
So how do you see unions?
Man, I got a new equation, man, that me and a sister recently made up. It's called A equals K to L. And A is accountability. Equals is, K is the key to liberation. So accountability is the key to liberation. And so I put that A equals K to L, I put that all over everything I do right now, because accountability means that much to me. I want to be accountable to the people around me. If the unions were accountable to people's true objectives and not to some other rich person or somewhere else who had political objectives that are being seeded by all kind of, on-the-job politicians, because that's what unions have become. Instruments of coercion. They become instruments of coercion, but not they have that they don't even though they would feign that it would give you some sort of freedom behind this, because your collective power means this. But your collective power only means that this guy gets to exercise it, not that you get to exercise it. So the accountability has to be to the masses of the people. The union has to be able to say that what we are unionizing around, even if that officer is a member of this union, if it was accountable to the people. The people say, that ain't what we want in this union. Get out of here. But that's not, the unions are not organized that way. They're only organized to get money at this particular time. And so there is that kind of talk. We can unionize around freedom. It can be done. And that's what it's going to take. Yes, bro.
Yeah, somebody asked a question earlier about, well, your response to the question was about connecting. Connecting the different groups and organizations that you mentioned earlier, how you was fortunate enough to connect with a particular organization, you know what I'm saying, that obviously helps sharpen your sword.
Yep.
You know, you sharp. So my question for a lot of people, you know what I'm saying, who got good intentions, you know what I'm saying, is it's not like, okay, we need to connect, but like, what advice do you have, you know, websites or what groups or organizations or what reading material can they specifically go, you know, to sharpen themselves? Because there's a lot of people that got good intentions, but they don't really, you know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
We need to be sharpened, you know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
So, if you understand it.
Gotcha, for sure. Thank you, brother. Great question. I say, and it's really not easy, I shouldn't even preface the question that way. It's so easy. It's so easy to get connected right now because you have the wealth of the internet. Please use it before they lock it down. This thing is not going to be free forever. I just want to let you know that. You know what I mean? All this information that you have, soon you're going to have to pay a pretty penny for it. And when you can't afford it, then they're going to shut you out of the information age. So know that. And use it now. And connect. And with that being said, yuhurumovement.org. Get that one. www.yuhurumovement.org. I want you to connect. Of course. And the reason why I say that is because that was an organization that helped me when I explained to you how I was able to gain some political education. It gave me masses. Glasses for the masses. It gave me glasses for the masses. And so that's what happened. And so now I'm telling you that we all need to be involved with the Hip Hop Congress. Every one of us. I know we already are. I would be able to be now involved in some critical decisions about how we can take this thing and sharpen it with all of our wants and needs. As a spokesperson, I will try my best to represent you and what I'm able to say. And if I'm doing it wrong, please be the first one. I give you all my email. Tell me what I'm doing wrong. And I'll try to do it better. But in this day and age, it's so crazy. I mean, we can literally turn Facebook into our own movement, our own Twitter. We can tune ourselves into the same room without ever having talking to each other on the phone. You know what I mean? Literally. Obama used it, you know. We can, you know what I mean? Literally. So there's so many ways that connectivity can go down, but we have to be organized. And I think in specific, I'm recommending revolutionary organization. And sometimes I can't get all of that out right now, so talk to me afterwards about what particular revolutionary organization. That's the connectivity. Brother.
Congratulations on the new position as spokesperson for the Hip Hop Congress. Related to that, something I heard a number of times last year was that having a Hip Hop Congress chapter at Evergreen was equal to cultural appropriation of hip hop. It's my belief that building the hip hop community could be beneficial anywhere. I was wondering just as the spokesperson if you could address that.
Of course. Now, when you say, I have to ask you a question, cultural appropriation, in what way?
I think just not being in an urban setting, being predominantly white school.
Gotcha.
Things like that.
I'm mindful of the fact that hip-hop is African culture. Everybody has to be mindful of that. Everybody must. But that doesn't mean that only Africans are involved in it. Shit, so is jazz. So it's rock and roll. It's African culture. It's okay. I think the idea is that we have to be able to recognize the root of where culturally where we stand in and how we can be empowered by it. If we leave Africa out of it, we leave the power source out. If we leave Africa out of any equation in the world today, you have relinquished your power for the rest of the world. Believe me, Europe knows it. They all in Africa. They have divided Africa into so many. You know what I mean? We got to recognize it in hip-hop and say, hey, this is our power base. Let's take some of that and rub some Africa juice on it. And it's good. You know, really, it's okay to do it. And white people got to do it. You know, why I say that all the time. You know, for some people are mad at, you know, sometimes I would get mad at that. And people think their friends are actually mad at it. So really, it's like this is something that's so far-fetched for me. But there are people who are, you know, white rappers. People have, you know, certain kind of problems that I don't at all. But I can tell you that to me, the difference would be if one would say, before I speak on this mic, can I get, can I have permission from my ancestors who I know gave me this culture, came straight from Africa? And to me, that would admonish any white rapper of having to have any guilt at all about rapping. Like, that's great. Like, I'm glad it happened. And even though it doesn't happen, it's cool with me. But I just want to say that, you know, no. Having hip-hop, it strengthens hip-hop. It strengthens the real movement for what people would call the purity of hip-hop, which I started not to care about a little while ago. I was really like, bump hip-hop, you know what I mean? Because of the fact that they had co-opted it in such a way. But it's the hip-hop conference that gave me like the ability to say, hey, we can go in here and get this thing back, let's snatch it back. We don't gotta just let it go down easy like jazz and rock and roll and all of that. We can literally control this $100 million industry. It don't seem much when you're talking about a bailout, but a lot. Yeah.
What's up? Much respect. I'm sorry I didn't wear a shirt either. I was running out the house. So in such like a hopeless world where everyone just feels, I mean, especially America or you know all over, people feel like they don't have anybody who would help them, or no one's moving, or you know, it's we got this television that tells us the way we are, and with the use of the videos during the Valentine's Day, you know, uprising, and they could have been seen as you know anything from showing the rest of the world what's going on to you know being narcs of a sort. You know, multiple kids got in trouble for this because of those videos. And then lots of other people saw it and got very interested in what was happening. And lots of people still think that the person who got arrested was in the fight, you know? Mm-hmm. So, with information in regard to all that, what would you say?
Well, I think it made me move carefully. The problem is that we don't control the media. And that's the whole issue. Because they can, you know, Rupert Murdoch owns MySpace and Facebook and all this shit, and he is the police. So then, at the end of the day, it made me say, I'm definitely not going to talk to the media about it. I didn't talk to the media at all about what happened here at all. Only people I talked to were on the phone. I refused to do it because I knew how the mixed mangle. I never knew who I would implicate by that. And I, you know, for coming from the streets, that's the first thing you say: keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut. Don't talk. I'm of that mentality, but I do know that certain people were inspired by it, and I'm glad that that happened in that way. But now is the race for control over our media, and that's the way we're going to be able to really do right now. Okay? Yeah, so.
From one anti-capitalist to another, it seems to me like the riots in Oakland started out as a peaceful protest. Do you think that the people who were actually shit up in the streets where provocative is.
I can't say so. The reason why I can say that is because I don't have enough information.
Yeah. It just seemed like from your question earlier that you sort of insinuated that.
Well, the person who asked it framed it as if it was a member of our movement who acted other than how we would have wanted it to happen. And how to deal with that person. Now, I don't know how that went down in Oakland. Maybe that wasn't part of the plan. I don't know. And unless you know, and you are telling me that these people violated this peaceful protest and whatever, then I would say the same thing, you know, about those people. Because if the objective was to go out and do like this, that's what made Dr. Martin King so powerful, who I didn't give any respect to for a long time because of his particular stance on nonviolence. But, you know, when I came to understand this is a tactic and strategy that was not violated at all by any member of his organization, he was clear and ran a tight ship. You best believe if they wanted to swing back, they could have all been out there thugging. You know what I'm saying? But they were like, no, I'm not thugging. We're not doing it. I'm not doing it. And you're not doing it, you're not doing it. And if you're going to go out there and violate what we're doing, then don't come with us. I know it's hard, but you know, so we have to be able, I recognize, you know. So, I don't know. I don't, and that is my policy. No investigation, no right to speak. And I've not done any investigation, I don't have right to speak.
I want to apologize, ladies and gentlemen. We got about 3 more questions and we got to call it a night, okay? Sorry about that.
First, I want to say thanks for coming again. And I like your fit. I want to know what suggestions you would have to reverse the damage that has been done to our youth through schools and to get them involved in the revolution.
Well, strong question. You're so right. I just read a quote by Frederick Douglass, who I have not been a very big fan of my whole life. He was a slave owner, you know what I mean? But he said that it's easier to raise children than fix broken men. And so for me, that was telling. I don't want to have a defeatist attitude about where we are, but I realize that a lot of people ain't going to change. A lot of people don't unite with the movement, who don't want justice, who don't want solidarity, who are cool with how it's going down. And you got to know that there are people who feel that way right now. Some of them might sit right next to you, really, who aren't going to bust a grape to get out of the situation, who cool with it, going to smoke a joint, and tomorrow is tomorrow. You know what I mean? I'm not that one. I'm not that one. So, with that being said, educate. What is it all about? And this is where I really, it's educate. It's my, educate. Yeah, it's that's the way. I think independent schools and charter schools that we are controlling our curriculum, that our curriculum is one that is intended to show the true meaning of the system. And that was point number 8 in the Black Panther Party. To be able to have community control over education and allow an education to show the true meaning of this system. Then we're going to be talking the truth to our kids, and that's the only way we're going to undo what's been done and get to the future. So at the end of the day, I dare say, you know, none of my children, I have 2 daughters who will never go to the U.S. school system, never ever. And we're only going to talk about
it. All right. I just want to make a quick announcement. At 7 p.m. downtown Timberland Library, we're going to be having a community-wide meeting to help organize for justice for one of our community members, our brothers, Jose Ramirez Jimenez, who was executed by the Olympia Police Department for being a suspect with no trial. So I just wanted to make that really quick announcement.
Wow. Y'all know about that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I don't know about it. Give me a leaflet. Somebody give me something. Email me something. All
right. I'm really glad that you touched on like Barack Obama and the fact that he is just a figurehead. He's supporting the status quo. And taking into mind that a lot of like hip hop artists do support like Barack Obama. Like, I wonder like what kind of interactions have you had with artists that do support Barack Obama? And I guess, like, has it put any strains on the relationships that you've had with people, especially taking into mind that you are now the new spokesperson of, like, the National Hip Hop Congress?
I mean, let me tell you. my particular position has made me a lot of enemies throughout. This is not new. I see most rappers' opportunism, and that's exactly what it was, is opportunism at being a part of Barack Obama's candidacy to save imperialism, because that's what it was, that's what it is. He's trying to save imperialism by this whole stimulus plan and everything else he's doing, ushering in this new world order. Did y'all hear Henry Kissinger doting on Barack Obama about using all these things as positive ways to bring the new world order? And it had been, that's actually status quo word right now in the media. You can find it everywhere. New world order. It used to be like hush, hush. But, you know, I just got to say that it is evidence to me that the middle class is strong. The middle class agenda won and electing Barack Obama. And it said, and because a lot of rappers or cultural artists will do exactly, they will go wherever the power is. They are pawns, they can be used to blow in the wind. That's not me, I'm anchored. I'm anchored in the movement. I'm anchored in the working class people. That's where I be all the time. You want to find me, come holler at me right there. But these rappers are not there. They blow with the breeze, and they're doing that. And to me, when I confront them, like, there are people who I like as human beings. I don't agree with their political position, but who, like Nas, who I helped to produce on his last album, but I don't unite with him at all in his position about the U.S. government at all. And the only thing I can do is be non-liberal with him, be as honest as I possibly can. And even if you don't unite with me, all I can say is, you'll see. You're going to see. And at the end of the day, that's what I can do. With Will I Am, who I feel like is politically weak. I feel like he's like almost like a rag in the wind. You know what I'm saying? Like, with what he does, it's kind of like kowtowing for American imperialism, making red, white, blue songs and all this. Is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. But he's my friend. I can call him on the phone. He's a great producer. He makes great beats, right? So when I get in front of him, I say, Will, man, he's on some bullshit, though. That's crazy. And he say, well, and I know where he's going with it. He sees a place for himself in the future and the victory of the middle class in America because of the election of Barack Obama. And I see a dead-end road. I see a drying and dying but not dead system that we got to go ahead and dance on before, you know what I'm saying, anything else happens. So that's what happens. But, you know, it's all a part of our ability to, and I ain't saying I'm right. Shit, the imperialists may win again and stomp us all down. But I'm going to tell you this, I'm going to go down fighting. I'm not going to go down.
I kind of hesitate to ask my question because you haven't really raised this issue since I've been here. I arrived late. But I kind of have this personal dilemma when I think about revolution and revolt and rebellion and all these wonderful things. But my dilemma is that, you know, it's highly illegal for somebody to commit tax fraud or not pay their income taxes in our country. And our income taxes, or any tax rather, is supporting the agenda of our government. And right now it's supporting 2 foreign wars and 1 domestic war, you know, with surveillance and, you know, domestic terrorism and all these things that are targeting civilians, tax-paying citizens. How can you be a revolutionary in a very true sense and still be a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen at the same time when your taxes are killing people?
It's a heavy question. I was grappling with this last night. It almost made me miss my plane this morning. Literally, that question right there. That was a serious question. Because, you know, it's still, you know, my opposition to this kind of, to the imperialism is real. And the way I've learned to cope with it, because you're right, every little cent we spend in tax, it's go to drop a bomb in Palestine, you know what I mean, Sam? I know this. And so, it does a lot to me to try to divest from it. There are many open ways we can divest. I think that those are ways that we can really kind of get them by the nuts. Like, don't support certain things. Boycott, these things are real to me. And you know, because a lot of times we left with like really limited ways to feel like we can do anything. I know I feel that way. I feel powerless a lot. So I'm like, how can I do anything? So one way I'm like, you know, I just started doing small things. So we have to be able to like get together programs and say, well, goddamn it, I'm not going to give no money to Starbucks because goddamn, look, you know what I'm saying? They admit, you know, you can actually look at the list of people who are, you know, it's the list I'm opening out about the people who contribute to the war. You know what I'm saying? Well, I'm not going to openly do that. But even when you don't, even when you buy a stick of gum or some water or whatever you need to stay alive, energy, whatever it is that you buy with your money, contributes, right? The idea is that we have to build dual power. Because I ain't gonna be able to ever get power in this particular time if I say, well, I'm not gonna wear the shoes and I'm not wearing none of these clothes or whatever. I'm not gonna ever be able to get amass any kind of power. We have to create an idea where we are having a dual power relationship. Above ground, we are in opposition to what's going on. But every little chance we get, we are slowly but surely building an infrastructure that is an organization that intends to tear this motherfucker down from the root. And it got both of them have to happen at the same time. It's not you do one or you do the other. Because that's got to be the strategy, folks. It's got to be the strategy. If you don't, how are you going to live? How is you going to live? You're going to be so demoralized with guilt around spending a dollar on a bottle of water that you will never get to where we have to go. We have to build dual power. Do one side, building the revolution, the other side above ground, not with it, but doing what we can do. And until we're powerful enough on this hand to say, well, we don't need them anymore. We have nation. We can grow our own. We can be our own. We can, inside ourselves, produce. And that way we can become more powerful. That's the only way we can do it.
Has to do with how to interact just with the police when they're not breaking up a protest, when they're just, you know, in line at the coffee shop, whatever. There's a lot of different opinions in this town about how to do that, and there's a lot of people who at every opportunity are like, fuck you, and Lord knows that's justified. But I'd like to know where your stance is on that. Do you think that kind of antagonism at every interaction and letting them know that we see them as agents of the state, we ain't with it at every opportunity. Do you think that's helpful? Or do you think that there's a way to, assert where we stand against towards their role in society as agents of the man that also can show them love as human beings? Or is that just some liberal bullshit? What do you think?
It ain't about love as human beings at all. It's not about love. These people are people with jobs. They have a job. Their job is to protect the interests of the state. Got nothing to do with a subjective relationship. They have an objective relationship to the state, and my objective relationship to the state is the person who's a victim of it. Their objective is the person who's in collusion with it, who's a lackey, who worked for it. So all in all, I have the same sentiments of hate for that particular position because it stands on the blood of my people. So how do we interact with the police in this particular way? As much as I, you know, look at my t-shirt, I'm still not loving police, you feel what I'm saying? I'll tell you this, you know, we at this particular time, we have to create, use what's called democratic space. Democratic space, ladies and gentlemen, is that particular unwritten buffer zone that we have to be able to organize without going to jail. Because you gotta save, you gotta not go to jail. You can, if you go to jail, you waste your resources, all that hundreds of thousands of dollars that you use, and we could be using in our campaigns. I mean, we have to really strategically say when we're gonna go to jail. And do it then, and only then. Don't do it when we don't have to go to jail. So, with that being said, there's democratic space. We have it in this country. They don't have it in other places. There's places, if you say anything about the government, your ass is going to jail immediately. I know some of them. I have kept them in exile in my house. And I'm like, wow, I'm glad I got this particular way where I can go outside and say, fuck the police, and I go to jail. You know what I'm saying? And so we have to use that particular space right now as much as we can before they clamp down on that. Because there will be a time when we have to confront the police at every turn. There was a time during the 60s where it was open warfare with the police. I'm talking about shoot back warfare. Man on man, you get one, we get one. We're not at that place right now. I'm not romanticizing about it. It's not pretty. It's bloodshed and caskets. You losing your friends, your comrades. I can tell you, my OGs tell me all the time. And one day we might have to get into that particular kind of situation, but we have to prepare. You know what we say? We say, more sweat in peace, less blood in war. More sweat in peace, less blood in war. That means the harder we train now, easy's gonna be to wipe them out. We're gonna be super strong. But we gotta use it while we got this particular time. Because when we don't have it, we're gonna be going through what's called the fire. We're gonna be getting baptized in the fire. There are gonna be people who wanna come into the movement and who don't have time to learn political education. They just gotta go. People join the Black Panther Party who were pimps. A pimp, straight out of a pimp in an alligator shoe, join the Black Panther. I can tell you because I know his name. His name is Pete O'Neill. He lives in Tanzania right now. I went to Tanzania to visit him. I'm talking about a Black Panther in exile who, when he joined it, was a purple hat wearing pimp with a purple stripe and an alligator shoe. And I'm telling you that and the reason why it happened was because he didn't have that space to get in all the luxury we have to figure this shit out. We didn't have it. He's like, oh man, police shoe, join the party. You know, literally. We got it, so use it. Use it right now while you can. And and when it's time, I'll see you on the front line, because that's where I want to be. Sure. Thank